At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
The future, that's where our minds are at Western Illinois University Quad Cities. We are innovators, searching for something new outside of the textbooks. Dog-loving, leadership-driven, world-changing. Whether you choose to study on campus or online, your future is designed on your terms. Start your future at wiu.edu/QC.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.
The state of labor in 2024, and a big race with Little Motors taking the course in the cities. For 30 years, the District of Rock Island has become a race course during the Labor Day weekend. The Rock Island Grand Prix is back. We'll talk about it. But first, the message behind the Labor Day weekend. A little more than 11% of the American workforce is union members. More than 14 million are union members, and almost 2 million others are not union members but are covered by union contracts. It's a big drop, though, from just 40 years ago, when more than 20% of the U.S. workforce was unionized. So what happened? I talked with the president of the Quad City Federation of Labor, Dan Gosa.
We're airing this, of course, during Labor Day weekend. So tell me, what should Labor Day mean to the average American?
Oh, well, you know, America was built on the back of, you know, labor, folks putting in the 40-hour work week and things like that. So a lot of our folks reflect on, you know, the 8-hour work day, the 40-hour work week, you know, and then all of the labor laws that have been put in place, you know, to protect workers and stuff. And some of that stuff has been challenged on the Iowa side, whereas it gets strengthened on the Illinois side. So we're kind of in a mixed bubble in the Quad Cities.
So explain that to me. I mean, is it, this sounds dumb, but are workers' rights always under attack, so to speak, in your viewpoint?
It seems like it has been the last few legislative cycles in the Iowa House. I mean, you know, rolling back child labor laws, that's a huge thing. The cuts to unemployment. I mean, some of our members, it depends, you know, weather, things like that, what's going on. But to shorten up that window to draw unemployment, you know, that really affected a lot of our workers, you know, especially like your heavy highway and things like that. Some of the like UAW members that go on factory shutdowns and things. I know UAW or some of the John Deere facilities are going on shutdown right now, you know, and that directly affects them. And, you know, especially with the child labor stuff, when kids should be focusing on schoolwork and things like that, now we're wanting to put them in meatpacking plants and all this stuff. It's just crazy. You know, and you could only work till this amount of time. Well, kids that are still in school, they need to be able to do their homework. They need to be able to pay attention in class and not sleeping in class, right? Because we want them to have a solid educational foundation to go on to the workforce or post-secondary or whatever, you know, their plans are and things like that.
You did bring up Deere & Company. And of course, as far as the labor movement and the employment situation throughout the cities, I mean, that is the big headline right now. What concerns do you have with the announced layoffs and really in some ways the employment restructuring at Deere & Company?
Yeah, you know, so it's a little bit mixed on that because now some of the salaried employees see what some of our union members go through, right? When they do that restructure and things like that. So then they try to get you to come back for less money and things like that. Also, you know, on the good side, a lot of our labor unions put together, job fairs. So then some of the UAW members are able to go into like a building trades or different, you know, realms of work to be able to still support their families and things like that.
Think of it is, though, Deere and Company, whether they're salaried or whether they're a rank and file union members, these are really good paying jobs.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. It's very, when a company makes record profits and then, you know, and then they're just letting go of people, it makes you wonder, are they downsizing? Are they planning on maybe, you know, pulling up shop and going somewhere else or something like that? It's always interesting times when things happen like that. I mean, granted, they do go on shutdown sometimes when, you know, they're not in the harvest season and things like that. There has been less demand for, you know, those products and things, especially with the move of everything being like, you know, self-run. It's almost like a Roomba vacuum, right? You program the thing. I've talked to several farmers, and then it just goes out and does it. You know, you're kind of taking the human being out of things nowadays, it seems like.
Well, and it's interesting also is that Deere & Company said that, and they've been pretty clear about this, that part of the transition is to go from a farm implement company almost into a technological, almost an IT type of company. Where does that put unionized workers?
Well, obviously, you know, our folks are really good at adapting to things. At the end of the day, you're still going to need people building those things. I mean, robots are great and everything, but they break down, you know. You can't replace that human element on things like that. So obviously, a lot of folks have shifted towards the IT thing. It's the same as, you know, like when I was in school, everybody pushed go to college. And now we're on that trajectory where it's, hey, you need to go into trades, you need to do things like this, because that workforce shortage, right? So we always kind of things run in a cycle, and now we're like on that cycle for that, and then we'll revert back to where we were, because as things even out, you set so many people up to get to a level, and then when it levels out, you kind of got to go back to, you know, what's tried, true, and tested.
I want to take you back in history a bit, because as you well know, back during the Clinton administration, the big trade agreement between Canada and Mexico was NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Association. And then President Trump made adjustments to that and said it was going to be a win for American labor and American workers. And yet you're seeing Deere pretty clearly say that they're building a factory in Mexico. A lot of the Dubuque workers, a lot of the Quad City workers could end up, you know, losing their jobs to that plant in Mexico. I mean, what has American trade over the last, what is that now, 25, almost 30 years, what have these trade agreements done to the American labor movement?
Well, so I think like one of the biggest things that you see every day, like when you especially if you work in the construction industry or you're at home or whatever, doing your home stuff, when you buy tools now, it says, you know, made in the USA with globally products or whatever and things like that. I think, and at one point, I believe they were trying to take that label away where it said made in the USA. And, you know, one of the bad things for us is people don't pay attention to the things that they're buying. They're not supporting, you know, like some of these jobs are using foreign steel and things like that. And when we're helping take away from our workforce, right? We're taking away from good American jobs. And I think some of those things that, as you said, President Trump put in place, that was to help other countries out, not so much us. It might lower the cost on things, but are you really getting a quality product? I mean, I've been on job sites where they brought, you know, they use Korean steel or whatever on some of the pipes, and that stuff doesn't hold up as well as the good stuff that our folks, you know, produce and things like that.
Well, let's talk politics for just a moment, because you're running for, I believe, the 81st district of the House as a Democrat, unopposed right now in Iowa. So you'd be a supporter of the Democratic Party and the Harris-Walz ticket, I'm assuming, of course. What do you hope to see if Harris is elected as far as labor agreements, trade agreements, or even how labor is treated?
Well, so I'm going to say this, and I'm a younger guy. I think President Biden's been one of the most labor-friendly presidents in my lifetime. And with VP Harris being right there, I think she can build on a lot of that momentum. You know, very not too often do you have presidents, vice presidents walk picket lines with you and things like that, you know, and really care about the working people. And organized labor kind of sets the tone for folks because we're organized, right? And the, some of the things we do, it directly affects working families because, you know, we're setting those things in place and people are seeing a lot of that. So I think you'll see a lot more folks wanting to unionize. I mean, an awesome story. We actually have a Starbucks right in Davenport that, you know, voted to unionize. I think only one person voted not to in that bargaining unit or whatever. I mean, that's awesome.
But as you know, like in the 1980s, union participation was about 20% of the workforce. It's now down to about 10 or 11% and didn't really grow in the last 2 years nationwide, I'm talking, of course. That's not really a good prognosis for organized labor.
Well, so I think what you're seeing now, you're getting a lot of folks that are kind of turning towards that tide where they're in favor of, you know, union labor. When we had the UAW strikes in this area up in Des Moines, had the Kellogg strikes and things, all kinds of folks, businesses came out. I mean, they were bringing, you know, packages of water, food, pizzas, all kinds of things. There was so much support there. I just think with some of the, I think it's going to be a game changer, especially like in, on the Illinois side here, they just did that. The captive audience law is going to be going into effect, I want to say January. That's a huge thing for people to want to organize. Whereas when you go across the bridge and you live in Iowa, like I do, you know, when things are branded, you know, right to work and things like that, well, yeah, that's a no-brainer. Everybody wants a right to work, but it's basically a right to work for less. And I think now people are starting to pay more attention to things like that, especially after the pandemic. People saw kind of how they were treated in the workplace and how some of those safety things weren't put into place to protect them. I think that played a lot into it, and it's been opening people's eyes. So I think you will start to see that trajectory of union membership go up. But so again,
So do you see this Labor Day 2024 that labor is in a strong position?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we get a lot of folks to turn out for our parade. I want to say our parade is the third largest in the state of Illinois or whatever, but we have the Quad Cities. But you see, I've been seeing like a lot more in people invigorated, right, by the change at the top of the ticket that you talked about earlier, by, you know, organized labor. We're getting a lot more apprenticeship applications and things like that. And people applying for good union wage jobs. So, but in some companies, you know, like you got your Costco's and stuff, they offer a great wage and benefits and things like that. So they might not necessarily be union there. I believe they can start a union if they'd like to. But, you know, as wages go up, you know, that's what we're all about, improving lives for working families. And we want to make sure, you know, that their workers are protected as well. Because at the end of the day, you want to go into work better than you came out. We want to make sure everybody goes home. That is a huge thing. That's a thing that we strive for.
Our thanks to Dan Gosa, the president of the Quad City Federation of Labor. It was 3 years ago when the drummer known as Dead Ginger joined us on the stage of the Black Box Theater for the original series of performances that were recorded by WQPT. So here's Dead Ginger with Clarity to Chaos. Thank you. Dead Ginger with Clarity to Chaos, performed at Moline's Black Box Theater. Well, you know the city hosts a lot of big races, the Criterium for bicyclists, the Bic 7 for sprinters and short distance runners, the Quad City Marathon, and another tradition that makes a big deal about little engines. The Rock Island Grand Prix is North America's largest karting street race, and it is making its 30 years of racing right now. We talked with Grand Prix Steering Committee President Roger Ruthart. So the Grand Prix, and I love this, is the largest karting street race in North America. You were a part of this since almost day one, if not day one, if not before day one even began.
Well, this you're actually right, but at first it wasn't my choice. This all started out as an event sponsored by the Rock Island Argus. Right. It was originally the Rock Island Argus Grand Prix. And we lost our publisher and editor, Jerry Taylor, this year. He was the driving force behind seeing that motorsports was on the rise, and it was a way to help support events in downtown Rock Island. So he was the one that, he said, no, everybody said, you laughed when they talked about doing it. And he said, no, this is a great event. We used all our employees. We did it for 3 years, and it got so big that he said, you know, we can't do this anymore. So then the Downtown Business Association, which had been starting festivals on its own, decided to take it over. And that lasted for a while. And then it got so big that they couldn't do it. So we created a separate not-for-profit organization that has, since the first 8 years, I guess, has been putting on the event.
Because you think of karting as like a little boy sport or something like that. But first off, it is amazing the diversity of the racers, but also you just love the sound. You love the speed. It is such a great spectator sport.
And where else in motorsports can you get 6 feet away from the racing? I mean, you can stand behind the fence and watch what's going on. But yeah, we have
like, and move around the course. You're not just stuck in one location.
Exactly. And we have people that, you know, tailgate and, you know, have their favorite corner or whatever. But we have female racers, we have husband and wife, we have father and son. We got a guy racing with us this coming weekend that's 78 years old. I mean, we've motorsports in kart racing is a way, it's a way that younger drivers get introduced and learn their racing skills and all that before moving up to cars or something else.
Right.
But it's also an inexpensive way for just people that love to race to get involved.
And two things. First off, it has a bit of an international component to it. I mean, you got people from outside the United States taking part.
We've had people from 13 different countries race here over the years. Last year, we had a driver from Latvia and Bermuda. The Bermuda guy's back this year. We have Canadians that race. It's well known.
And in the karting industry then, I mean, you think of Indy 500 and Indianapolis. In the karting industry, Rock Island is a name.
And it's been said before that it's the Indianapolis 500 of karting. And it really is. It's a race, but it's much more. It's important for the racers. You know, you got to love the sport to travel from Florida or California to come race on the street that's bumpy in Rock Island. So,
but it's a qualifier for some, is it not?
Well, we have a sponsor, Simpson Motorsports in St. Louis, who last year and now this year again is paying for the winners of several of our races to compete in national, international level races at the end of the season.
And that's a huge boost. I mean, that makes this race even more important.
Oh, I think so. I mean, it's you know, he sees it as doing something for the racers in the race, but it's also important for the sport. I mean, we have racers who are going to go race, like in Las Vegas this year, the big supernats out there that probably wouldn't go otherwise.
Yeah, this makes that all possible.
Yeah.
Tell me what's different. Downtown Rock Island, of course, as you were alluding to before we started recording, is a lot of construction going on.
Right.
So your route's a little different.
So we've had to move the route. Basically, we've moved it west. We're racing, for those who are familiar with downtown, we're racing around the new parking lot that was made when the parking garage was torn down. So it's a little bit different than the old track. It'll be different for the racers. It's actually maybe a little better for the spectators because you can sort of stand in that parking lot and look all the way around and see what's going on instead of being blocked by buildings. So it is what it is. We'll deal with it this year. We've got a lot of support from the different city departments, the police and public works and all that, to be able to do this. And so, hopefully they'll get the streets done. The city will have a much better looking downtown and everybody will benefit from that.
And there's always next year.
Oh, yeah.
When you go back to the regular route or however you do it next year. But the other thing that's big is that it really is a big party for a lot of people. I mean, I used to have a great time going to it. And you're trying to bring back a little bit more of that. It's more than a race atmosphere in downtown Rock Island.
Right. The big thing we've brought back this year is a free Saturday night concert in Schwieber Park. We have two bands that are from out of the area, so they're not the usual bands that are great, but play the free concerts. We have one that just won the Chicago Blues Challenge at, you know, Legends in Chicago, and we have another band that has toured the United States and Europe several times, been around for like 20 years, so both well known, but I think people will enjoy hearing both of them. Starts at 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon till first band goes 4 to 7 and then 8 to 10. So we're done early. It's not a midnight or 1 o'clock concert.
Well, and also, as you said, I mean, for the racers, I mean, a lot of times these other tracks that they go to outside of Rock Island aren't in the center of the city. I mean, you've got basically hay bales and fencing, and that's all that separates the racers from the spectators, and they're able to mingle and get together. I mean, that's got to be kind of special.
Yeah, I think that's part of the attraction, certainly to bring the racers here. They don't get to race in front of, you know, 15,000 spectators other places. They're in a racetrack in the middle of a cornfield somewhere, and mom and their girlfriend are watching. So they do enjoy coming here, but what has been missing basically since COVID was that Saturday night. I mean, they like to get together with the race fans, and the race fans like to get together with the racers, and they all get together and have a good time. Some maybe a little bit too much, but, you know, it's going to be a great event. We've partnered with the Rock Island Parks and Rec, who do concerts in Schwieber Park all the time, and Mississippi Valley Blues Society, which the last couple of years had their events canceled due to weather and weren't able to hold their Blues Fest this year. So we're encouraging people to come and enjoy the free concert, but if you can, please make a donation to the Blues Society so they can come back and have their 40th Blues Fest next summer. So there's that angle too. The entertainment will be great. The party atmosphere will be great. And we're happy to have the partners because, honestly, we do racing for 18 hours a day and don't want to stay up till, you know, midnight to do the concert events. So we have people that are really good at doing that who we're working with. And our sponsor, Hemp Doctor, has come in and one of their products, Southern High Seltzer, is actually sponsoring the concerts, you know, paying for the bands and all that. So it's really been a great partnership that we all hope works really well this year and we all benefit from going forward.
Roger Ruthart, Grand Prix Steering Committee President. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
The future, that's where our minds are at Western Illinois University Quad Cities. We are innovators, searching for something new outside of the textbooks. Dog-loving, leadership-driven, world-changing. Whether you choose to study on campus or online, your future is designed on your terms. Start your future at wiu.edu/QC.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.